Good morning. So just to get something off the bat, my dear brother spent a lot of time holding my cape up for me as a kid. It was a fun experience. We both were mad into superheroes growing up, and fortunately he was into Batman because Batman's cape never flies, so I didn't have to hold up his cape for him. But yeah, good times, superheroes. Thanks, Dermot. Anyway, good morning. It is great to see you all here. I missed you guys last week. But if it's your first time here, my name is George, and all you guys are most welcome. So last week, Justin kicked off our new series, Running with Giants, and it's been great. And the whole premise of the series, okay, is that throughout life, we're going to come across obstacles. And sometimes those obstacles are going to be difficult to overcome. And we've all been there. And have you ever just been in one of those situations and you're just kind of like, I wish I just had somebody I could ask. Whatever it is going on, I wish I had just had somebody that I could ask. And it's completely normal. My Wi-Fi is not working. I wish I had somebody I could ask. My car is screwing at me. It's making this funny noise every time I go to the NCT. I wish I had somebody that I could ask. My young fella keeps putting his head in the toilet. I wish I had somebody I could ask about that one. Or I'm trying to be a godly husband for my wife. I wish I had somebody that I could ask. Or I love Jesus. I love him so much, but there's things that he doesn't love that I do love. I wish I had somebody I could ask. Or I want to be courageous for Jesus. I want to be courageous for him, but I'm afraid of stepping out of my comfort zone. Or I'm afraid of stepping out of my safe place. I wish there was somebody I could ask. And in so many aspects of life, we seek mentors, whether it's in our career, whether it's in our lifestyle, whether it's in fitness, whatever it is, we seek mentors in life. And the same thing applies to our faith. And so the whole premise of the series, imagine that you could spend a day by being mentored by some of the giants of our faith. So you're talking about the men and the women of the Old Testament who fought and won great battles, who served kings, who went through great hardships for God and came out of the other side, transformed, recreated, and made whole by God. If they were able to sit in the chair across from you and you were able to spend just a few precious moments with them, what would you ask them? Or more importantly, what would they say to you? And here's the thing, Christianity, it isn't just about doing church. It's not about Sunday. When you become a Christian, when you enter into that realm of faith, you become part of this intergenerational community. And what that means is that as Christians, we get to walk in the footsteps of these giants. Or as the series says, we get to run with these giants. And last week, Justin, he spoke about Esther and finding purpose when we are running the race of life. And this week, we're going to be looking at somebody who just loves to run. Now, most of the time, it's in the wrong direction, but he just loves to run. We're going to be talking about Moses, and we're going to be looking at a topic that quite often we like to ignore. We're going to be looking at fear. So here's today's opening question. How do we overcome fear when we're running the race of life? Okay, so I just want to do a quick synopsis on Moses. So just a quick synopsis on who he was. Moses, he was born a Hebrew, and the Hebrews, they were God's people. So at the time, they were a nation that they didn't really have their own land, their own home. So what they did is they kind of just stayed in other people's land, and they kind of stayed in other countries. And at the time, once upon a time, that was Egypt. But the Egyptians, they began to see the Hebrews as a threat because, well, the Hebrews were good at making babies. So they kind of started populating very quickly and growing very fast. And so the Pharaoh, who was the king of Egypt, he saw this as a threat. So he ordered that all of the newborn Hebrew baby boys be cast into a river and be killed. So what Moses' parents did is they took their newborn, they placed him in what I hope was a waterproof basket, and they hid him in the river. And the baby in the basket, it goes down the river. It was a last-ditch effort for them to save their son. And we read that later on that the Pharaoh's daughter was in the river doing stuff you do in a river, and she found the baby. And the baby was scared. The baby was crying, which is understandable because the baby's in a basket going down a river, which is kind of scary. But she found the baby and she took the baby as her own. She rescued him. She adopted him and she named him Moses. So Moses, a boy who was supposed to be destined for death, who wasn't supposed to go anywhere, he ends up becoming, he grew up in the splendor of the Egyptian court. And he ends up becoming Pharaoh's adopted son. So he was raised a prince. And I should also point out here that the Hebrews, that God's people, yeah, they're in Egypt, but they're in Egypt because they were slaves in Egypt. And also, Moses knew exactly who he was. He knew the people that he came from. He knew where he was from. But he chose to run from it. He chose to cling to his adopted identity rather than admit who he was. Moses chose to remain in his safe place where fear doesn't exist. Now, however, the Bible, it does show us that that he shared a deep deep compassion for his own people, for the Hebrews. It says that when he was a young man, which back then was 40, so I would have been like a child back then. But it says in the scriptures that when he was a young man, he saw this Egyptian foreman beating a Hebrew slave. And he got so worked up and he got so passionate and his heart longed for his own people that the scriptures say that he approached the Egyptian person beating the Hebrew slave and he looked both ways, made sure nobody was there. And out of passion, he killed the Egyptian person beating the Hebrew slave. And it says that after that, fearing punishment for what he had done, or better put, realizing that his safe place was no longer safe, he did something that he was good at. He ran. And what he did is he ran away to this desert. It was an area called Midian. It's about 1,000, as the crow flies, 1,000 kilometers. So it took him a good old while to get there. And it says that he got there. Moses then went from being the prince of Egypt. He became a shepherd. He went and he married his boss's daughter, which wasn't so frowned upon back then. And he became a shepherd. He built a good life. They had a child. He was actually going to end up becoming heir to his father's fortune because he was the only fellow there to take his father-in-law's fortune because he was the only person there to take it over. And he had built such a safe life. But it was a life that was very far from how he was raised. And it was even further from the life that he was born into. But this was his new safe place. And one day, while he was tending sheep, and he was doing, you know, stuff that shepherds do when they're minding sheep, and he experienced something that probably would have scared him half to death. He sees this burning bush. Now, that in itself isn't so unusual. Like, it's a hot, it's a dry climate. Even today in hot, dry climates, it's not unusual to see forestry start smoking and fires start. So seeing a burning bush might not be unusual. But he saw this bush, and there's a flame, it's burning, but it's not burning. He's like, why isn't the bush going away? Why isn't there ash? Why is there this big flame? And so now me at that point, I'm kind of like, I'm going to go that way, but why is the bush there? And he gets closer and he's looking and all of a sudden, now I don't know what bushes sound like, but I imagine it was something like, Moses. At which point he went, like me, and ran away. But no, Moses, he's got a good backbone. Moses decides to stick it out. And so the bush starts talking to Moses. And so he hears this voice from the bush telling him that he has been chosen to lead the people of Israel, or the Hebrews, out of Egypt. That he was there to lead them out of slavery. And can you imagine the conflict going on in his head at this point? God telling him that he was going to return to Egypt, that he was going to save the Hebrews. God telling him that he had to leave his safe place. And you can imagine his contemplating. It's like, but Bush, I've already ran from Egypt. I've already, didn't you see me? I had to run because I saved one of your people and I ended up killing a man. I had to run. Didn't you see me going through this? And now you want me to leave my new safe place? And then he says, no, you're actually going to do something else as well. He says, he was also to declare the unity of God to his people, because at the time, most of the Hebrews, they were worshiping many gods. And Moses was to tell them that there was only one God, that these Hebrews, that they were to only have one God. So it's like, okay, so I have to go back. I need to leave this great life, this easy life, this my life with my wife, my kids, my career. I have to leave all that, and I have to go back. And remember, I killed somebody. I'm probably going to have to face corporal punishment, and I have to go back, and I have to lead these people out of slavery. And not only that, I have to tell them that they're all sinners. I mean, come on, Bush. Because you see, Moses was afraid. So Moses did what he did best. He ran. He tried to cling to his safe place. And he says, and at this point he's realized that it's God and not just a bush. But he says, but God, who am I that Pharaoh should listen to me? What would I even say? What if they don't believe me? And each time God reassured him, he said, I'll be there. I am who I am. And then in the last ditch attempt to sway God's decision, he says, well, you know what? I have a stutter. I can't save a nation. I can't do it. I can't talk in front of people. And to which God replies, he says, I've already realized that. I know you're not perfect. And you know what? I've already taken that into consideration. I've already accounted for it. So the next bit, this bit really is a summary because we don't have time to go through the full story. I encourage you to read it later, the first few chapters of Exodus, or go onto Netflix and watch the movie, Prince of Egypt. Great movie. But Moses returned to Egypt. He persuaded the Hebrews who he was. And then Moses, he went and he informed Pharaoh, the king of the time, that the God of the Hebrews demanded that Pharaoh free his people. And we've all seen it. You've seen the movie. He walks into this palace and he goes, let my people go. But the Pharaoh was reluctant. Sure, he was probably excited to see Moses. It was his brother, after all. He probably hadn't seen him in years, and he didn't even know he was alive. But he was reluctant, and he refused to obey. And what ended up happening is that he brought himself and his people 9 terrible plagues. And all a plague is a disease or a disaster that spreads quite rapidly and most of the time ends up just causing death. And each plague that happens, God caused it, but each plague that happened, they were severe to the Egyptians, but they left the Hebrews untouched. And the last plague, what it did is that it broke Pharaoh. It left him heartbroken, and it moved him to grant the Hebrews permission to leave immediately. So after this, Moses, he found himself the leader of this undisciplined collection of slaves that weren't even sure who their God was. But under Moses' leadership, this collection of freed slaves, they became a nation, and a nation that still stands strong today. Because you see, when God used Moses, his legacy surpassed his fear, and it lasted forever. So that's Moses. Going back to our series, Running with the Giants, if you got the chance to sit across from Moses, just for a few precious moments, okay, what do you think he would say to you? So I have 3 things that I think he would say. The first one is, we don't naturally leave our safe place. As a baby, Moses, he didn't want to leave his mother's arms. Did anybody ever just hand you a baby and the baby's there bawling, crying, and you're kind of like, that was Moses. He was the baby, not receiving the baby. He was the baby. He was safe in his mother's arms, but he was forced out of that safe place. Then later on in life, he didn't want to leave Egypt. It was all he knew. He had an adoptive family who loved him, but if he hadn't left, he never would have seen the burning bush. And after that, if he didn't leave his wife, if he didn't leave his job as a shepherd, if he didn't leave his family, the life, the safe place he had there, if he didn't leave there, he never would have seen God part the Red Sea. Or he never would have seen his own people saved from slavery in Egypt. Or he never would have gotten to meet God face to face and receive the Ten Commandments. Moses didn't want to do any of what God asked of him. But look at how much his life changed because of it. And we all have, each and every one of us, we all have our own safe place. And perhaps it's your family. It could be your job. It could be a role or a position that you currently hold. It could even be a hobby that you've adopted, or it could just be something that you enjoy doing. It could be a certain group of friends. Your safe place could even be sitting on a corner couch watching a series on Netflix eating Ben and Jerry's. But that's just me. Your safe place is wherever you choose to go when you have a spare moment. And I'll be 100% honest, more often than not, there's absolutely nothing wrong with your safe place. Absolutely nothing wrong. I'm not saying safe places are bad. I'm not saying that at all. But here's the thing, okay? And here's what Moses would say. He would say, learning requires change. Sure, you can accumulate information and become a walking encyclopedia. You'd be one of those people that reads an article in a magazine on a certain topic and all of a sudden is an expert in said topic. You could be that person. We all know them. We all know them. But learning requires change. Well, George, maybe I just don't want to learn anymore. Maybe I'm at a place in life where I'm done learning and I'm just going to, you know, live life and I'm not going to learn anymore. Well, then if that's you, you're probably just using a different word for learn. You're probably using the word growth. Which brings us into our second point. What Moses would say is, say, growth begins when we leave our safe place. Because, you know, Moses had absolutely everything he could have possibly wanted. He was an Egyptian prince. The possibilities was there for him to rule countries. But it was only after he left Egypt that he began to learn what was really important. And even though it took 40 years of being a shepherd in a desert, even though it took 40 years, Moses had been broken. He'd been remade. He'd been remolded. He'd been recreated by God. By going from a prince to a shepherd, he learned humility. And here's the thing. You can't stay the same and learn at the same time. And all too often, it is our relenting or our unwillingness to give up our safe place that causes us to miss out on the opportunities that God has intended for us. In Jeremiah 29:11, it says, "For I know the plans I have for you." In other words, God has clear intentions for all of us, but some of them miss out on these intentions, these possibilities, because we're so busy being safe in our safe place. And so you're like, okay, I got it, I know. Growth requires learning, which requires change. I get it, but I don't have what it takes to be the person that God wants me to be. I can't do it. I don't have it within me to do that. I don't have what it takes. I can't be the person that God has intended me to be. And you know what? That's exactly what Moses said. In Exodus 3:11-12, but Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said, "I will be with you." And then in Exodus 4:1, Moses says, "What if they don't believe me or listen to me? And what if they say, 'The Lord did not appear to you?'" And God said, no, he says this over a whole chapter, so I'm going to paraphrase. You can read it yourself later. But God says, "I will prove who I am." In other words, I don't require you to save people. I don't require you to influence anybody. I don't require you to do any of that. You tell them about me. I will do it. I will save them. I will prove who I am. And then even after all of that, in a last-ditch effort to sway God's mind, Moses says in Exodus 4:10, "I can't do it. I have a stutter. I can't talk in public." But God replies in Exodus 4:11-12, and he says, "Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf and mute? Who gives sight or makes them blind? Is it not I? Is it not the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say. In other words, whatever his excuse was, or whatever your excuse is, God is either already taking it into consideration or has already sorted it. Whatever your excuse is that you feel you can't follow God, whatever shortfall you think you have, whatever reason you use to warrant not fulfilling God's purpose for your life, he's already taken it into consideration. He's thought it through. The third point I think Moses would say to us, your safe place will rob you of your greatest moments and memories. I want to take all the places that Moses called home. I'm going to relabel them slightly because I think it's a transition that we all need to make. Egypt was this land of not enough. And sure, Moses was raised in a life where he had a lot, but as an Egyptian, he was always going to be missing out on his potential. And a lot of us are afraid of risk, and we're so afraid of risk that we spend our entire lives in this land of not enough. And few people are willing to leave their safe place. But like Moses did when he became a shepherd and entered the land of just enough. He moved on. He moved to Midian. He went through the desert, and he moved into this land of just enough. And this is a place where you learn. It's a place where you grow, where you change. It's a place where you get glimpses of God's full potential for you. But it's also where you accept that God wants more for you. And like he did with Moses, he wants us to leave this land of learning. He wants us to leave this land of just enough. And he wants us to enter into the promised land, or this land of more than enough, or this land of your full potential. It was only through faith that Moses left his safe place. And this is what's required of us if we want to enjoy, if we want to experience God's blessings to the fullest. And now, this may sound cheesy, and it was corny. I laughed when I wrote it. But if Moses was standing here in front of you, he would tell you that you need to move away from your safe place and you need to step into your faith place. Because more often than not, in your safe place, you don't make room for Jesus. Last week I was traveling with Dermot. We had a little bit of a break, and we went to see who we now call Uncle Ronnie. You've all seen him, an old, cuddly man. And he was introducing us to a bunch of his friends, and we were supposed to, if you're on my Facebook, you've seen I ate a lot over there. But we were meeting a bunch of his friends for meals at different times, and we were supposed to meet this one individual in particular. Anyway, our schedules get mixed up, the wrong times are communicated, and so we eat, and then an hour later, we met him, and we're like, oh my gosh, we're so sorry, we didn't understand, we our schedules got mixed up, we ate without you, and for some reason, he looks me dead in the eye, and he goes, but what about me? And you know what, as we're looking at Moses, we've all heard about him. We've all heard about his struggles, his triumphs. Now we need to ask that exact same question. But what about me? Which brings us to our main point today. We have to abandon safe and live by faith. You need to write that down. You need to abandon safe and live by faith. Because like I said, quite often in our safe place, we don't have Jesus there. But he's in our faith place. Well, I'm afraid to leave my safe place. I'm afraid to step out of it. I'm afraid to step into my faith place because I can't entirely control it. Well, you know what? In that fear, in Exodus 3:7, God says, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. And you know what? The Bible is God's word. It's God, as John 1:1 says, that he is the word. It's God talking to us. So I'm going to say that as if God is talking directly to you. I have indeed seen your misery. I have indeed, I've heard you crying out, and I am concerned. Because like I said, God is not in our safe place. He's in our faith place. And whatever it is, God sees it. Whatever it is, whatever cry out you make, God hears it. And he's concerned. And the same, we go back again. Well, you know what, that's great, but I don't have what it takes. Do you think Moses had what it took? Do you think Moses made a bush burn? Do you think Moses went into Egypt on his own strength and said, let my people go? Do you think Moses caused those 9 terrible plagues? Do you think Moses parted the Red Sea? Do you think Moses caused manna to come down from heaven to feed a nation of Israelites? Do you think Moses just made up the 10 commandments? No, God did it. God said, introduce me. I will prove myself. And so we stand here today and we say, well, you know what? I don't have what it takes. I don't have that. I can't do it. Well, you have Jesus. I don't have what it takes to live out what God has intended for me, but I have Jesus. That deserves an amen. Amen. And after paying for the price for my eternal salvation, the greatest gift, the greatest tool that God, that Jesus has ever given us is faith. And you see, the Hebrews, they were slaves to Egypt. And today, humanity, we're slaves to sin. We're slaves to this world. And the slaves in Egypt, the Egyptians, they oppressed, they bullied, they hurt, they destroyed, and they killed the Hebrews. And the sin does the exact same thing to humanity today. And Moses didn't actually save the Hebrews. Like I said, Moses, he didn't go set the bush on fire. He didn't cause the plagues. He didn't change Pharaoh's mind. Moses didn't do all that. God did it all. And like Moses, do you think I stand here on my own accord? Do you think that the church saves and redeems us? Do you think that the church of Christianity has a plan for us? No. But Jesus does. Jesus lived a perfect life. He hung on a cross. He paid the price for my flaws as well as the flaws of everybody in all of eternity. And after 3 days, he defeated death, which conquered sin. Because you see, Romans 6:23, it says that the wages of sin is death. But now, through Christ, sin has no wages. Because for me, Jesus conquered all. For me, Jesus redeemed everything. For me, Jesus gave the gift of faith. For me, Jesus made a plan. For me, Jesus has set me free. And in the second half of Jeremiah 29:11, the band are going to come up in a moment. For me, in the second half of Jeremiah 29:11, God says, I have plans to prosper you and not to harm you. I have plans to give you a future, to give you hope and a future. Because of Jesus, I have hope. Because of Jesus, I have a future. And because of Jesus, I'm being shaped into that future. He is working on me. He is shaping me. He is changing me. He is recreating me. Or the label that we put on it is, Jesus has made me born again. And like Moses, God intends for that future to be larger than I ever could be. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to challenge you. What is keeping you from God's plan for you? And I desire it's your safe place. We have to abandon safe and live by faith. And now you could be here this morning, and you're beginning to understand and accept what Jesus did, and you're beginning to understand all of what we just spoke about and what we just mentioned, and you're wondering, how do I accept that? How do I make that real in my life? How do I embrace that? How do I get to know this Jesus that you talk about? How do I get set free. And you know, this is why Jesus is so great, because he made it so simple. You admit who you are, and you accept who Jesus is. You admit who you are, a slave to sin and this world. And you accept who Jesus is. He is the person who paid the price to redeem us. You admit who you are, and you accept who Jesus is. It's that simple. He never designed it to be complicated. And if that's you right now, if it's your first time and you're questioning that and you're trying to figure it out, and you've understood who you are, and you realize the need for somebody like Jesus, I ask you now to invite him to change your life. Because I can't change your life. Church can't change your life. You can't change your life. You're prone to your safe place. But accept Jesus, because he can. I invite you to pray with me. God, you are so good beyond belief. God, we thank you that you gave us people like Moses to show us what it means to really learn to follow you. God, I pray for each and every person here that they would just embrace who you are. God, I thank you for the price that you paid for me. I thank you that you sent your son, that you sent Jesus Christ to die on a cross for me. I thank you that he took away the wages of sin. God, I pray that each and every one of us would come in reverence, and that we would accept and admit who we are. And I pray that we would accept your gift of redemption. I pray that we would accept your gift of salvation. I pray that, like Moses, we will realize that we can't do it by our own strength, but that we can do it through you. Like you said to Moses, I'll tell them who I am. I'll prove myself. God, we thank you for proving yourself to us. I pray that we let you change us, that we let you make us live to our full potential. I pray that we embrace the life that you have designed for us and that you have intended for us.